So before I get to the matter at hand, I feel called upon to say something about what's capturing the headlines these days. And again, I think you all know what I'm referring to. And you know, it seems like these kinds of tragedies only replace the headlines of the ones that were there on the headlines 3 weeks ago and 4 weeks ago. You know, you look at the pictures of the grieving people, the destroyed buildings, and you go, how many times have I seen this? Right. So all I really want to say is, you know, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is ancient. It actually comes to us from that part of the world, right? It's a way of being of ancient tribes, clans, that lived according to that. Very dangerous in our modern age, very dangerous. As we know, the Buddha said very clearly, hatred will only end by non-hatred. Violence will only end by non-violence. He was very clear. There is no other way. And we see that the world is once again just calling for an acceleration of violence, right? Revenge. And revenge only leads to what? More revenge. I mean, there's no end game to the type of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And it's sad. So I just want to say there is another way. Thich Nhat Hanh showed us that way. You know, during the whole Vietnam conflict, everybody's choosing sides, killing each other. He refused to choose sides. He chose the side of ceasefire, end the violence. You know, stop killing each other. You know, I mean, I don't need to go on and on. You know this as well as I do. You know, as A.J. Musty said, there is no way to peace. Peace is the only way to peace. Violence is not the way to peace. In Buddhism, we believe in cause and effect, right? So every cause creates an effect. And the idea that violence and war can somehow create peace is foolhardy. It's not. Anyhow, I don't need to go on, so I just want to caution all of us to watch our hearts, watch the emotionality of reactivity, and step back and go, you know, what is my end game for this world? Right. Do I want this just to continue and continue and continue? Then let's just feed it. Throw more money, more armaments, more, you know, right? Let's just feed it. But if we go, no, there's got to be a better way for human beings to live on this planet. And there is a better way, really. And all the great, hopefully the great religions teach another way. So, who was it that said, you know, we have to, when everybody else is losing their head, right? Somebody has to keep theirs. Right. Somebody has to stay stable, clear, you know, and have, you know, stand up for another way of being. So, that's my two cents. So what I wanted to talk about today was something I really haven't looked at in maybe decades. And I just kind of picked it out for the fun of it. It's called the, how would you pronounce this, David? Hua Hu Jing. This translation is called the Unknown Teaching of Lao Tzu, you know, big name in Taoism, so to speak. And I guess it's a little controversial because it was supposedly banned at some point and all the copies were destroyed. But somebody, a Taoist master, said that he it was maintained orally and then it's been written down again. So that's for academics to argue about, the authenticity, but the bottom line, it has incredible wisdom. And again, this translation is by a man named Brian Walker, who is really a poet, but he was also an American practitioner of Taoism. So I think that it's probably a little, probably more modern than, the traditional translations. But I just want to share it with you and see what we make of it, because I think it speaks to us. So this is, I'm picking, they're just all in short verses, half a page. So this is number two. Men and women who wish to be aware of the whole truth should adopt the practices of the integral way. These time-honored disciplines calm the mind and bring one into harmony with all things. So that's fairly straightforward. I guess the only thing that's worth reflecting on, am I somebody who wants to know the truth about this world, the truth of reality, the truth of who and what it really means to be a human being, the truth of human potential? Am I somebody who wants to know that? If my response is totally uninterested, then this is not meaningful, is it? But if you are somebody who says, I'm interested in understanding this life deeper, understanding what's going on here, causes and conditions, and understand the potential of what it means to be a human being and how to end suffering and how to be truly happy. Yeah, these kinds of, I'm interested in that. Then he says, should adopt the practices of the integral way. Now that's, I'm not sure all that means, because I'm very specific in Taoism. But I think the key thing for us is should adopt the practices of. So it's like, it's not just going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Right? I mean, it can sound good, and we can say, I'd like to understand things more deeply. I'd like to kind of understand what's really going on here in this world so I could act more, wisely and skillfully. Yeah, I'd like to understand that. Well, unfortunately, then we have to practice something to change, right? Because now we don't know, right? So we should adopt the practices of the integral way. And way here is, has many meanings. I'm not a Taoist, but it really means the way of truth, the way of being, the harmony of all things. Right? That's the Tao. That's the fundamental energy of life, right? The fundamental flow of life, the Tao, the way, the true path in life, right? So we need to become aware and to practice. And then he says, these time-honored disciplines calm the mind and bring one into harmony with all things. So he's given us a little more of a hint what he's up to, right? That to live in harmony with the way, to understand the deep and truths of life, we undertake these practices, these disciplines that calm the mind. Did we spend a little time this morning? Right? Hopefully everybody had a little taste of it. we may not be super calm, but perhaps we're just a little calmer than when we came in. Now, why do we need to calm our mind? Anybody have any idea why we need to calm our minds as part of this discipline? This is not profound. Why do we need to calm our minds? Just call it out. Why?
To be present.
Yeah, so we can be present. Right? As long as the mind is agitated, distracted, not only will there not be an inner feeling of peace, but our ability to undertake any discipline any practice will be, you know, very difficult, right? Because the mind is kind of agitated. We're always looking this way and that way. So there needs to be, to undertake any kind of discipline, a certain level of calmness, right? Which means an absence of agitation. You know, and the analogy is, you know, if the water is stirred up, you can't see the bottom of the lake. You can't see the bottom of the gulf. You can't see what's there, right? If we stop moving around, or if the waves get calmer, right? Calmer, the water gets clearer, and then we can see what's there, right? We know, don't step on that. Right, in Florida, we don't want to step on. What don't we want to step on? What do they call those things?
Fire ants.
Yeah, we're walking around, but we go in the water. We want to be aware. We don't want to step on fire ants, and when we get in the, we definitely don't want to step on stingrays, right? But it's very hard not to step on a stingray if the water's murky, isn't it? And that's like us, you see. Our minds are murky. We don't see clearly, so we always are ending up stepping on things, right, that we don't see coming, and then we suffer, and we hurt, and we, right? So calmness, clarity allows us, gives us a chance to see what's going on. And when I see there's no stingray there, I know I can what? Proceed. But if I see there's a stingray there, I know to what? Stop. Look. And then I have an opportunity to what? To make a choice. But if I don't see what's there, my capacity to make a choice, I don't have. And again, that's the way many of us live our lives. We don't see that we always have choices. Choices in what to say. Skillful, unskillful. Helpful, not helpful. Right? Choices. What's arising in my mind right now? Healthy, unhealthy. Something I want to nurture or something I'd rather not nurture. If there's no calmness, if there's no self-awareness, we'll just stumble into it, right? As many of us do, we're just swept away. But if we have some degree of calmness, some degree of awareness, we see the mind state, we see the impulse, we see the reactivity. Oh, I'm aware. Remember we said that in the meditation. Oh, I'm aware. I don't want to cultivate this. Let me choose something else. These time-honored disciplines calm the mind and bring one into harmony with all things. Has anybody ever been in disharmony with things? Just think, close your eyes. Anybody ever been in disharmony? Disharmony with yourself, disharmony with people in your family, loved ones, disharmony with colleagues, right? Everybody know what that's like? Just take a moment, you know, admit the truth, and notice how it feels when we're in disharmony. Again, disharmony with ourselves. Struggle, fighting. Disharmony with people, even people we love, we're in disharmony. So, you know, what is that like? And then ask yourself, if I had a choice, would I choose to be in harmony? Harmony within myself. You know, many people, their inner life is different parts of themselves are fighting, struggling with each other, right? Who's going to be in control? No harmony. And the same with others. You know, so, yeah. So these time-honored disciplines calm the mind and bring one into harmony with all things. The first practice is the practice of undiscriminating virtue. Take care of those who are deserving. Also, and equally, take care of those who are not. So right away, he issues us a big challenge, right? Undiscriminating virtue, undiscriminating goodness, undiscriminating, you know, like the sun, right? The sun does not discriminate, does it? It'll shine on anything, right? It'll shine on beautiful things, wanted things, it'll shine on weeds, it'll shine on cacti, you know what I mean? It'll shine it, right? It doesn't discriminate. Its ability, the warmth of the sun, the light of the sun, it will shine anywhere and it brings forth life, doesn't it? Wouldn't it be terrible if all of a sudden the sun decided, I don't want to shine on Florida anymore. People, right? No, you know, we'd feel terrible, wouldn't we, son? Right? Sun doesn't discriminate, does it? It shines its light. So, the encouragement, very simple encouragement, you know, take off the blinders on our heart, take off all the ways we parse out who we're kind to, who we're not kind to, who we're compassionate about, who we're not compassionate about, who we, you know, who we think about, who we don't think about, you know, who we care, you know what I mean? All that stuff, which we do very close, we do it in the world. He suggests, you know, just shine, you know, care about everybody. Want everybody to be happy. Want everybody not to suffer. You know, want all people to be safe, right? Want all children to be safe. You know, not just some and not others, right? So this is a very different mind, isn't it? Right? I mean, I'm looking at somebody who I know is a physician. You know, when you're a physician, You don't sit there in the ER and somebody brings somebody and says, "Nah, I don't want to deal with that one." No. Right? I mean, we go, "Wow, fire that person!" Right? I mean, that's not a physician. They're physicians should what? Heal who? Everyone. Non-discriminating. Use your capacities to help everyone. Not pick and choose or discriminate, worthy, unworthy. The first practice is the practice of undiscriminating virtue. Take care of those who are deserving and those who are not deserving. And who decides that? Who is deserving? Who isn't? Who lives? Who dies? Who deserves to suffer? Who doesn't deserve to suffer? Who should make those decisions? Interesting. In other traditions, they may say, you know, that's the providence of God, right? It's not of human beings. Who are we to decide who's right, who's wrong? Who should live, who shouldn't live? Who's worthy of being helped and who's unworthy of being helped? Who's worthy of being healed and who's unworthy of being healed? When you extend your virtue in all directions without discrimination, your feet are firmly planted on the path that returns to the Tao. So he's saying, you know, when we start cultivating this mind that does not discriminate good from bad, right from wrong, shouldn't, you know, worthy, unworthy, and opens the heart and mind to everyone and everything, we're beginning to enter this Tao, you know, this is fundamental way of being. Right? I often use the example, we are very accepting of the Tao of nature, right? I mean, we accept lions and tigers, don't we? And we accept, what are those ones that bound around, the gazelles, that look so, right? We don't, to protect the gazelles, we don't say, well, let's eliminate, let's kill all the lions, all the tigers, all the predators, all the jaguars, let's get rid of them, right? Because they don't belong in my nature, the way I think nature should be, right? Let's just kill them all. Has anybody made that suggestion? Why don't we do that? Why don't we choose one animal over another? Somehow in nature, we can accept everything. But with human beings, we just have a very different criteria. And actually, let's just go right to 3, which actually gets into this. This is verse 3. Those who wish to embody the Tao should embrace all things. So embody is a very important word. It's not for those who wish to study the Tao, read about the Tao, give talks on the Tao, right? Those who want to embody, which means I want to bring these teachings, these principles, embodied mean into my life, right? Into my life. So it's only when we bring them into our life, into our heart mind, that they have any power of affecting any kind of shift or change within myself and the way I show up in the world with others, right? It's only when I'm willing to embody them. Many people do not they go to church, they go to temple, they go to mosque, they go to meditation centers, they go to Buddhist temples, they hear the teachings, they talk about the teachings, but the idea of, I'm just not supposed to believe in them or study them or whatever, I'm actually supposed to embody them, live them. That's something that we often don't get, because we think, I think oftentimes we settle for like good enough. I go to, I'm a good person. I go to, it's funny, Thich Nhat Hanh, in his formulation in his younger years of what he called engaged Buddhism, he called the way the people in his country practiced Buddhism, he called it temple Buddhism. That was his phrase. He said, if you talk to most of the Buddhists in my country, and I think Vietnam was 80% Buddhist, he'd say, I'm a Buddhist. How do you practice Buddhism? I go to the temple, I make offerings, I pray, I support the monastics and the nuns, That's how I practice Buddhism. And so he formulated this idea of what he called engaged Buddhism. No, that's temple Buddhism. Buddhism is a way of living that has to be engaged in the reality of life, one's daily life, one's being. It has to be engaged. And here they're using the word embody. Right? So if we want to, if the teachings of the Tao that he's talking about have any meaning for us, then we have to be willing to embody them. And then he says, those who wish to embody the Tao should embrace all things. Just close your eyes, try that out, before he says any more. And ask yourself, that's exactly the way I live my life. I embrace all things. Just as they are. Embrace means, embrace has a, to hold. I embrace, I connect with. Ask yourself, I mean, a lot of people have trouble embracing themselves. It seems to be a major problem for Americans these days. We have difficulty just embracing who we are, ourselves, and all the parts of ourselves. You know, am I willing to embrace myself just as I am? Do I embrace my mother, my father, my son, my daughter, my brothers, my sisters, my cousins? You know, do I embrace them all as they are? You know what I mean? Just like, forget about the world. Just in my own simple life. Do I embrace everybody in my little world, in my family? Do I hold them in my embrace? Or not? So when we hear these teachings, we shouldn't just kind of skim over them, and we should stop and go, yeah, what's he saying? What's he saying to me, right? What's he really saying? And wow, do I believe it? Do I get it? Is it anything that really, that I want to bring into my life? So these teachings are meant to stir us up, you see. If we just sit here and go, oh, that's really beautiful. Oh, yeah. And we just turn the page, you know. On to number four. You know, that's how we read, right? On to number five. You know, that's really beautiful. Six, well, that's very profound. Yeah, great. All right. You know, what's for lunch? you see what I'm saying? We don't go line by line going, you know, what? You know, what's being said here? You know, and how do I understand it? And what are the implications of it? Then spirituality gets real. You know, for a lot of people, their spirituality is kind of an airy fairy thing that they kind of. You know what I mean? It's like a what? It's like clothes. You know, you put on, you take off. It's not embodied. A lot of people wear their spirituality like clothes, their religion, like clothes. It's a way I identify myself. Some of us are very proud of our clothes, how we look. But, do we embody it? Those who wish to embody the Tao should embrace all things. And then he goes on. To embrace all things means first that one holds no anger or resistance toward any idea or thing, living or dead, formed or formless. Close your eyes. Try that one on. listen to what this guy's saying. Or woman, we don't know. So he's giving us, do you want to be in harmony? Do you want to be in harmony with life? Do you want to have a calm mind? Do you want to have a calm heart? Then we need to embrace all things. And then he defines it. It means, because if one has anger toward anyone or anything, one is in a state of what? Not in harmony with them, are we? We're in a state of resistance. They shouldn't be that way, should they? Is that true? Just close your eyes. How many people in your universe do you hold in resistance? They should not be that way. They should not have done what they did. They shouldn't be doing what they're doing. Whether on a very personal level. Could even be with the people you live with, or, global level. But how often is that our stance? We resist. And a lot of our resistance is very common in our culture. We resist in what? Anger. Irritation. Irritation, mild anger. Frustration, mild anger. Anger, rage, fiery. Hatred. Just all degrees of anger. And the hotter it gets, the more dangerous it is. Especially when it moves from anger into rage and hatred. Watch out. To embrace all things means that one holds no anger or resistance toward the any idea or thing. So this is high bar, okay? This is high bar. It's like, oh, I mean, you're not going to leave here today. Yeah, I get it. From now on. And yet, to leave here and say, oh, I want to walk this path where that's the goal. You see? I got to do all these practices to get there, but yeah, that sounds, wow, that sounds like a nice way to be in this world and with people, to be in harmony with them, to not be angry at this and pissed at that one and resentful of that one, right? And we hold on to this stuff for years, don't we? Just, I mean, they could be dead and we still resent them. To embrace all things means, first, that one holds no anger or resistance toward any idea or thing, living or dead, formed or formless. Acceptance is the very essence of the Tao. Very powerful. Now, in Buddhism, acceptance is not like a thing. Like, you know, all right, I get it. I'm going to go out in the world and I'm just going to accept everybody just as they are, right? You know what I mean? It's like a thing that we're now going to impose, right? See, that doesn't work, does it? Because it's not based on anything. It's just like an idea, acceptance. Yeah. It doesn't get at, you know, what's holding this profound resistance we have to reality not being the way we want it to be. That's, you know, why do we get angry at anybody? Anybody been angry at anybody? Just raise your hand. Why are we angry at them? Because they're not acting the way we want them to act. I mean, it's really kind of simple if you think about it, right? They're not saying what I want them to say, or they said what I didn't want them to say, or they didn't say what I wanted them to say, or you know what I mean? But it's all what? Yeah, we're imposing our will on people in the world because we want people in the world to be the way we want them to be. And that is the root of our anger. Right? It's very deep, isn't it? It's very deep for all of us to live in a world where things have not worked out the way I think they should have worked out. Anybody angry at their parents? Resentful to their parents? It's very common. Why are we angry at them? Because they weren't the parents we think they should have been. Right? Because they did things that we think they shouldn't have done. Or they didn't do things or give us things that we think they should have. Is that true? Yeah. So that capacity to be angry, to be resentful, to even hate, is very strong in many of us. And we nurture it day after day, year after year, decade after decade. And it eats away at us. It doesn't promote calmness, peace of mind, harmony, does it? So, acceptance is the opposite, right? Acceptance is the opposite of resistance. So, this is big. So, how do you how do you accept things? Especially, how do you accept things which in your heart of hearts you don't believe should be happening, have happened, right? Is that true? You know, how do you move to that state of acceptance? In Buddhism, it's through understanding. Understanding causes and conditions. It is through understanding, a willingness to understand the causes and conditions of an individual's life, of my own life, of a country's life, of a people's life. You know, without that willingness to understand, which means look under the surface and look for the causes. Again, anybody that you're having trouble with accepting, right? It's because we won't accept that they have their own causes and conditions. They have their unfolding of life. They have their families of origin. They're made up of all the things that have happened to them and haven't happened to them. And the end result of all that is what? They are who they are and they act the way they do. They really can't help it. It's hard for us to believe because we always say what? They know better. They don't know better. If they knew better, they wouldn't do it. They're just puppets of their karma, of their causes and conditions. To understand that, we can't be angry at them. If you want to get angry at what they did. But don't get angry at them because they can't help themselves. That's understanding. So when we see what's unfolding, you know, today in parts of the world that look so horrific and unbelievable, if we just stop and say, this situation did not, I mean, Buddhism, everything is causes and conditions. You know, something has a prior cause. Something doesn't come out of nothing. It's very scientific that way. So if you look at any situation, you know, and if you just stop and go, oh, what are the causes, prior causes, that are causing people to act this way, to do these things? Right? If we're willing to stop and look deeply, there will be understanding. There'll be understanding. It doesn't mean that we don't act, but we act from a place that's not based on hatred and anger and revenge and an eye, tooth for a tooth. It's from understanding and a desire to restore harmony. Is there any way to restore harmony? Is there any way for me to restore harmony with this person that I've been holding anger, that I've been resisting? Is there a way to restore harmony? Is there a way to restore harmony in the world, especially from peoples or countries that have long decades of animosity and hatred, right? Is there, you know, is there another way? Right. So this willingness, which is very hard for us, because when somebody does something that we don't like, especially if we think they've harmed us or harmed other people that we love, or, you know, do we want to be understanding to them? Is that our first... response? Well, we want to understand what's going on with them and understand their cause and conditions. Raven's going, mm-mm. Raven says, no, I'm not. We want blood, right? We want blood. It's hard for us. So we have to retrain ourselves. You have to go, wow, before I judge, before I react, am I willing to understand this other person, where they're coming from? Am I willing to understand their life that has produced, that has brought them to this place in their life? With understanding, you know, we open up our hearts, human being to human being. and we want to find another way. Because if I just treat them the way they've always been treated, it's just going to continue. Just going to continue. But if all of a sudden I can respond in a very different way, and that way will only become apparent to us if we stop resisting. Look, when you're angry at somebody, is that a very open place? Huh? Very open to different options of looking at things and responding to the situation. Think about being angry at somebody. Maybe you're angry at somebody right now. You know, maybe there's on your angry list, maybe there's a couple of people right up top. When we're in the throes of anger, the emotion of anger, the mind state of anger, are we open? No. Closed. Closed-minded. And no good's going to come out of that. It's more of the same. Acceptance is the very essence of the Tao. Then he goes on to say even something more bizarre for us. To embrace all things means also that one rids oneself of any concept of separation, male, female, self, other, life, death. I mean, this is America, isn't it? We are great individualists, aren't we? And we love to label each other, don't we? You're this, and you're that, and and even these days, that ability to label oneself is becoming more and more specific, right? It's not only general labeling, it's much more subgroup, right? I mean, sometime when I'm with my kids or something, I ask them, well, what's this music? And they kind of give me a name for it. Like, I've never even heard of it. You know what I mean? I mean, how many different kinds in the modern music thing, Right? Anybody young here? I mean, there's like, it's just more and more subgroup. And each of those subgroups, subgroups, each of them have their own what? Followers. Right? Who identify, yeah. And so we more and more separate from each other. Right? More and more political distinctions. I'm of this, I'm of that. More and more separate. Separate. We identify more and more with these labels, with these things that separate us. Right? Which makes the whole cohesion of a society, of a relationship, of a family, makes it much more difficult. Because we are more identified with what distinguishes us, separates us, discriminates us from others, rather than what? What?
Similarities.
Yeah, then what are similarities? What are commonalities are? You know, in Buddhism, we have these incredible phrases of similarity, such as everybody wants to be happy, nobody wants to suffer. I mean, does that cut across all discriminations of peoples and races and genders and religions and all that stuff, right? Nationalism. I mean, it's like put that all aside. Those are just labels. Fundamentally, everybody behind that label is a human being. And all human beings, what? They want to be happy, and they don't want to suffer. And interestingly enough, if you ask them, how about the people you love and care about? Would you like them to be happy? And they would say, yeah. Do you want them to suffer? No. Right. So, but it's for most people, it's a very small group. The rest, you know, the rest I don't care about. And those people, yeah, I really want them to suffer. No, I don't want them to be happy. Yeah, let's make them suffer. I want them to even suffer more. What good's going to come out of that? But people don't think this way, do they? To embrace all things, one rids oneself of any concept of separation, male, female, self, or other, life or death. It's just this unfolding of life. Now, it doesn't mean, it's not like I go over there, oh, you know, I look over here, I go, you know, woman, man, or whatever. I mean, it doesn't mean I can't discriminate like as a, just a, you know, a noun, you see. But I don't give it any deeper meaning than that. Many of us, it's become a deeper meaning. It's become an identity. And it supersedes the fundamental identity that I'm a human being and you're a human being. You know, we're all just human beings. Right? Do we understand our commonality, our similarity? You know, and can we commit to nurturing that in each of us rather than our differences? Forgoing antagonism and separation, one enters into the harmonious oneness of things. So, you know, we hear a lot. Everybody hear about oneness? Anybody ever hear the word oneness? How's it sound? What? Sounds good, eh? Anybody gonna go, yeah, I'd like to enter the world of oneness, right? Anybody want to sign up for the world of oneness? Yeah, just kind of in harmony we answer. I'll sign up for the world of oneness. But am I willing to forgo the things that separate me from others, from experiencing that oneness? The experience of oneness is the experience of embracing everything as it is. That's the manifestation of oneness. We don't resist, we don't hold back, we don't open, accepting. We accept the oneness. It's like with nature, we accept. We accept gazelles and we accept lions. It's just the way it is, the way of nature. Why do we understand that lions are predators? Because we understand their causes and conditions. They can't help but being what they are, we understand. Now, there are implications of this. I mean, people go, I don't know about this. But we're just like fundamentally, yeah. Lions and lions and tigers are tigers. Gazelles are gazelles. And snakes are snakes. Rabbits are rabbits. They're just the way they are. Why? Because they have their own causes and conditions. They're different from each other. Human beings are the same. They have their own causes and conditions. Except there's so many more of them. And they've, you know, they don't all act the same anymore, right? You know, traditional cultures, everybody kind of dressed the same. Right? Everybody now dresses what? I mean, look around here. Anybody dressed exactly as you? Take a look. Anybody dressed exactly as you? Same outfit? If we were in, you know, other parts of the world, everybody dressed exactly the same. Or women would be dressed one way, men would dress, but everybody would dress the same. But in our culture, we what? What? Yeah, we express ourselves with our clothes. Just the way it is. Yeah, let me stop here. I mean, it's all kind of like this. I mean, but it's yes, but. So, yeah, any questions? Any challenges? Anything that's not questions, meaning it doesn't sit right? And people online can chat their question into Brian. People in the hall, we have a mic. People in the hall, raise your hand and Brent will bring you the mic, and you know the reason we have the mic is so people online can hear the question. So, you know, reflect on what you've heard. Any questions about it? Not just, you know, what it means, but application, which is most important. Yes, ma'am.
So a psychologist, Jack Engler, who's also a practicing Buddhist, mm-hmm. has said that mm-hmm. you have to be somebody mm-hmm. before you can be nobody.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. That's one of the things that he said. Yeah. I think he's probably said a few other things as well. Anyways, I'd just be interested in your comments on that.
Yeah, so that was very famous. You know, I mean, I've been in this for over 50 years, and Jack Engler, more probably in the 70s, sort of as Eastern spirituality became dominant, and he was sort of a transpersonal psychologist or something, a certain school, and that was a very famous phrase. But it has, you know, nuances of meaning. So he was observing something, right? So he was observing this movement of Americans, especially younger Americans, just to kind of, you know, hear about enlightenment, non-self, just going, wow, sign me up, right? You see? And they thought by doing that, all the stuff, all the pain, all the suffering, all the separation of their individual self would be solved by embracing a spiritual path, and even better, to become enlightened. Right? All gone. Right? I don't have to deal with my stuff. Wouldn't that be great? You know, all that stuff. You know, all this stuff from my child. You know, all this stuff, all that anger, resentment, and hurt, and, you know, low self-esteem or high self-esteem or, you know what I mean? Or wounded. I don't have to deal with anybody. I can enter another realm. And this will all go away. Right? So out of that, and seeing kind of the damage that often does to people, you know, Jack put forward this idea. Yeah, you need, which is really, you know, in its own way, very fundamental. It takes a certain degree of integration, right? It takes a certain degree of stability. It takes a certain degree of emotional maturity to really benefit from a spiritual path, right? Because if one doesn't have that, one doesn't have a very strong foundation. Right? It's like trying to build a house on sand. It's going to get wobbly. It's going to begin to break down. And lots of people who enter a spiritual path with that thing, you know, and then, I don't know if it was Jack, but somebody else, invented this term, spiritual bypassing, which also was around the same time, spiritual bypassing, which is, you know, yeah, I know I got all this crap in me, all this garbage. I'll just go around it. You know, learn how to meditate, learn how to follow a spiritual path, and, you know, I can just bypass it all. Unfortunately, you can't, because it's you. You see? So it's sort of the same thing. So, I hope, you know, 30, 40 years later, there's a greater sophistication. So that's why in our community, our entry-level path, we have three paths, is we call the path of mindful living, which involves, you know, learning how to be present and mindful and establish a certain degree of mindful awareness in one's daily life. And the second half of that is what we call emotional healing. That there has to be a certain degree of emotional healing and stability that would then allow you, when you enter, you know, the more deeply meditative path and spiritual path, you have a kind of stability and foundation that it'll grow, it'll take root. Okay? Does that answer your question? Yeah, thank you. Any other questions about these teachings?
We have a question from online.
Yes.
Thomas says, I tried for many years to change this one group, one at a time. I don't think it worked and would not work now. I've sort of given up. Is this unhealthy?
You know, Shantideva, this is 1,000 years before the Serenity Prayer, which has the same truth, said, you know, in terms of acting compassionately, he said, you know, he said, if the situation, the person is amenable to change, then do something, right? But if the situation, the person is not amenable to change, then just let it go with understanding. So that means wisdom. So, you know, without knowing the situation, see, I mean, like we might, like I, it doesn't even matter what the situation is, but it could be, so somebody says, well, I really tried to change them, and it didn't work. Now, maybe it didn't work because they didn't want to change. Anybody ever try to change somebody who didn't want to change? Raise your hand if you've ever tried to change somebody who didn't want to change. Very, very successful? No. Okay, so sometimes we try to change somebody and they don't want to change. But sometimes we want to help change somebody, but we're not very skillful. Right? You know, like we're not really understanding their own causes and conditions. We understand ours. So we try to change them in terms of our own view of things. Does that work? No, that doesn't work either. Okay, so, you know, I mean, the giving up really means, yeah, I think I understand these people clearly. They don't want to change. I've made it, or I think they want to change, and I've made attempts. You know, sometimes we just have to admit what? What? You move on, but sometimes I have to admit with people, I don't have the skill. You know, some people, you know, try, and I thought I heard them, I worked, and I realize, you know, they need somebody else. You know, just, and that makes me happy, because, you know, I hope, you know, maybe there's, you know, something out there for them. But to keep doing the same thing over and over again where it doesn't produce results, it just reinforces for them what? You know, that they can't change. That they're stuck with it, which is, you know, not, it's not very hopeful. So, you know, there's no easy answers. But yeah, at a certain point, you know, you might admit either very clear this person doesn't want to change, or, you know, I'm not the one to help them, you know. And that's, you know what I'm saying, that's a willingness to to admit we're not omnipotent. Anybody ready to admit they're not omnipotent, omniscient? You know, we think we are, by the way, but at some point we need a little humility, you know. Some people are just beyond me. I mean, I joke sometimes with people, I say, no, this person, they're beyond me. They need somebody, they need a fully enlightened Buddha to handle them. And hopefully, you know, they will run into their fully enlightened Buddha. Over here, maybe one, two. Anything else online?
Yes.
Well, let me take one down here. We took one down here, right? So we'll take one down here, then we'll come back. Yes.
Fred, I can understand how total acceptance can help my own peace of mind, mm-hmm. can give me compassion for other people, understanding causes and conditions. Mm-hmm. How do we reconcile with that, with the need to get something done? With the need to get something done in the world. And I'll use a trivial example. If you've hired somebody to install something in your house and they're breaking something else or they're not doing it correctly, yeah. or whatever, I can't just be totally accepting of that. What, you know?
Well, hold on. This is important. I'm glad you brought that up, because we misunderstand acceptance. Okay, acceptance means I understand the cause and conditions. I understand that I hired this person to do a certain job. They've been at it now for a while. They seem to be incompetent. All right? I can accept, because that's the reality. Okay. I accept all that. I don't do that with anger. I don't do that with disappointment. I mean, there probably a little. We're all human. But, like, I don't go on the war path. And then the only question to you is, okay, what do you want to do now? You see, if we get into rage, if we get into I can't believe it, then our ability to act clearly in this situation, you know, rationally and clearly, you know, it will be sabotaged. So acceptance, this is, all right, I think what, you see, acceptance doesn't mean approval. All right, how about that one? Is that a big one for people? All right, you know, to accept what's going on in the Middle East is not to approve. It's to go, yeah, this is what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just a simple statement. This is what's going on in the Middle East. And before I act or judge, I'm going to look into the cause and conditions so I can understand why people do these things. Right? Because they're all human beings like me. I mean, is that clear? You know, I want to understand. You know, I remember Thich Nhat Hanh, he didn't get a lot of followers on this. After 9/11, everybody remember 9/11? You know, and when the war drums were beating, right? He says, please stop. I mean, if only certain people had listened to him, we wouldn't have gotten into what we got into. He said, stop. He said, any person who wants to take over a plane and drive it into a building and give up their own life and kill other people, you know, what's going on with them? He said, anybody who would do that must be somebody who feels they're not being heard. And it's only by doing this terrible action that maybe people will attend to their pain. But he wasn't approving it. Do you understand? He was just saying, you know, let's understand what's going on here and what the cause of these people to act this way before we go, you know, take over a country and start a war. And if you think about it and how things unfolded in Iraq, you know, for decades, in Afghanistan, you know, see, that might have been much less costly. But it takes, you know, it takes a big mind to go, yeah. You know, who are these people? And maybe, I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh said, maybe we should talk to them. And, you know, we practice deep listening, you know, talk to them, you know. Tell me about your pain. Tell me about your suffering. Tell me why you did this horrible thing, you know. You see, I mean, because maybe if we can understand their resentments, their pains, what they're seeking revenge for, you know, we can find a way, another way than continuing this cycle of violence, right? And that's, I mean, I jumped to a bigger picture, forgive me. But I mean, yeah, I mean you're not thinking of killing the guy, are you?
No.
Just... But you know, it's again the same thing. You know, let's stop and just go, you know, what's going on here? Let's accept what's happening. And, you know, is there another way to respond to this situation? Yes, ma'am.
You've answered some of the questions that I'm struggling with,
okay.
Acceptance and approval. But I'm still struggling with resistance against people who want to take away people's right to vote or to commit violence against each other or animals. And how do I live in harmony with those? And if I'm not to resist, or what other choices are there?
Well, again, let's define terms, okay? Actually, you know what Thich Nhat Hanh called his Buddhist communities? This was in the early days. He called them communities of resistance. Now, what did he mean? He meant he wanted to establish communities where the values and the way people treated each other were different than the wider society. There were communities that resisted, you know, the consumerism, commercialism, you know, you know what I mean? Of the broader society, resisted by manifesting something else. But he called them communities of resistance. But again, we a lot of times, when we think of resistance, we think of what? What? Well, see, I never thought of that, but the resistance to the Nazis, you know what I mean? You know, they were armed resistance. We think, you know, to resist means to take up arms and to, you know, to resist, to push back. That's to resist. Right. So to accept, the two issues you talked about were?
Accept and approval.
Of what? But what were the issues?
Violence against each other, taking away people's right to vote, violence against animals.
Okay. Right. Okay, so if I said to you, what is your name?
My name's Tina.
Tina. In your perception, do you perceive that people, certain peoples, are trying to take away people's right to vote? Okay, so that's a fact. Whatever you consider harmful to animals, is that a fact? Are these things going on? Is the violence going on? Okay. So not to resist means to accept it's not to approve, it's not to say this is good, it's none of that. Acceptance means I accept the reality of what is. That's where I begin. I don't begin with resistance. I don't begin, you know, it's like, yeah, this is the way, you know, this is the way animals are treated. Is it true? Yeah. Votes are being taken away from people. Is this true? People, there's lots of violence in the world all over the place. Is this true? I don't resist the reality of life. That's what I don't resist anymore. I'm open. See, so again, openness means, oh, yeah, I'm just, come on, let's all have a big loving. You know, no, it's not that. You see, it's like I'm open, you know. It's like I open the windows means I'm open to letting the air come in. You know, I'm open. It's not, you know, so I'm open to the world as it is. That's where I begin. And then, like Dennis said, once you're open to the world, to people, to the whole situation, then the only thing is, you know, what do I want to do? See, what do you want to do? It's a fact. Some people might go, yeah, it's a fact. I'm not going to get involved. Somebody might say, it's a fact, I want to get involved. I mean, does that make sense to you? See that? But you begin from a place of understanding. You understand the cause and conditions that have created all these situations. You know, I mean, it can get complicated, you know, so many causes and conditions, historical, social, you know, emotional, mental, you know, God knows what in this world. But yeah, you understand, it's manifesting because of causes and conditions. I accept that. If I don't think it's good for the world, yeah, then what do I want to do? And that's positive. Instead, so many people, they get stuck in what? Disappointment, despair. Like the world shouldn't be the way it is, right? Despair. But yet, the world is the way it is. That's just reality, isn't it? It's hard for us to get out of that despair and anger and fear, you know, but that's the way we live our lives, in these emotions. Right? But once we go, yeah, this is the way it is. Right? This is the way human beings are treating each other. Some treat each other kindly, some people don't treat each other kindly. And a lot of people, you know, they treat certain people kindly, and then they're terrible to other people. This week they're this way, that next, you know. Okay. So your name again is?
Tina.
Yeah, so Tina, in the world as it is, in reality, your only challenge is, how do I want to show up? Do I want to show up with a calm mind, an open mind, a compassionate mind, a caring mind? Is that how I want to show up in the world? Do I want to show up in an angry mind, a sad mind, a scared mind, you know, like, how do I want to show up in this world? You know, those are like deep questions. I mean, it's like yes or no. It's like, but it really, you know, like, how do I want to show up in this world the way it is? You know, how do I want to show up in this relationship? I mean, don't make it the world. How do, you know, you have relationships. You know, how do I want to show up in it? Right? Do I want to show up in a noble way, kind, open, loving, caring, understanding? Or do I want to show up, you know, no, self-centered, narcissistic, angry, hurt, you know? It's hard for us to believe that we have a choice. That's our freedom, our spiritual freedom. You know, we have a choice in how we show up in the world. We have a choice of what we do with our causes and conditions. We all have our causes and conditions, right, that have produced us to be who we are today. And we look at that and we go, phew, I'm a mess. All right, okay. You know, that may be. That could be a fact, right? Okay. So what do you want to do? You know what I mean? Do you want to stay a mess? Or do you want to change? Interesting to think this way. It's a different way of thinking, isn't it? Yeah. Anyhow, we will end for now. Sorry, but it's time.